You are listening to The Pulse, Rod Murray's e-learning tech podcast, number 109.
Hi, this is Rod Murray. Welcome back to my podcast. That was a teaser from Woods of Chaos by Rob Kostlow. If you like New Age piano like I do, I'm sure you will enjoy his piece. Stay tuned for the full piece at the end of my podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Inside Higher Ed, the online source for news, opinion, and jobs for all of higher education. As always, I will post the links to all the sites we mention on my show notes at rodspulsepodcast.com. Today, the topic is a bit of a departure from my usual podcast topics. Instead of talking about a specific technology, today's podcast is all about online pedagogy. I interviewed Gwen Burbank. Gwen Burbank has been involved in training and development in various capacities throughout her career. She's been in diverse positions, such as a corporate trainer for Unisys. She lived in Africa for a while and worked in the nonprofit sector. She received a master's degree in instructional systems and training design and development from Penn State. From there, she managed a training team at AstraZeneca Pharmaceuticals and then later SunGard Higher Education. Gwen is currently the curriculum manager and instructional technology specialist for the MBA program at St. George's University in Grenada, West Indies. Wouldn't you like to have that job? Gwen is currently finishing her MBA at St. George's. I first met Gwen at one of our PADLA meetings. PADLA stands for the Pennsylvania Distance Learning Association. And of course, I'll have a link to PADLA on my show notes. Gwen had a unique opportunity. She went undercover as an MBA student. Of course, she's in the midst of her MBA program, but it was an opportunity for her to observe students as a student. So she discovered several key educational management issues, instructional design factors, and some teaching techniques that were helpful in keeping MBA students engaged and honest in the online classroom. So without further ado, here's my interview with Gwen. So Gwen, thank you so much for talking to me today. Really excited about what you have to say. As I've already told my audience, I met you at the recent PADLA meeting. And why don't you first, just start out by telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved at St. George's.
Hi, Rod. I'm delighted to be here. I really enjoy your podcasts. I find them extremely helpful and keeps me up to date in the field. I am a professional instructional designer. I used to work for a company called SunGard, and I traveled to many different universities and colleges throughout the world, helping them in their ERP implementations. St. George's was one of my clients. And when I was down there, they asked me where my spouse was, and I said I didn't know I was supposed to bring him. Next time I did, brought him down. He happens to be a PhD and a professor in business. It turned out they were looking for a business professor, and he basically went in and came back and said, Gwen, how would you feel if we moved to Grenada? So I actually ended up going down and being with one of my clients as their instructional designer.
Well, it sounds like a dream job.
It is a dream job, and it's a dream place. St. George's is primarily a medical school and a vet school, but they also have a very strong arts and sciences program that caters mostly to the Caribbean. But our MBA program that I work in caters to a lot of health professionals, doctors, nurses, pharmacologists, etc. And then we also have an international MBA that focuses a lot on the Caribbean, although we do have students from all over the world.
Well, at the PADLA meeting, your talk, I believe, was entitled something like Going Undercover as a Student Reveals Secrets for Keeping MBA Students Engaged. So how did that come about? How did you decide to do that? It sounded like a great idea.
Yeah, well, as an instructional technologist, I would always get online with our instructors, 20 minutes ahead of the class to make sure all the technology was working. And then I found myself staying on, and I was so intrigued by the content and what was happening online. And I thought to myself, you know what? This would be really interesting to get an MBA. So I signed up. I was accepted. And the next thing you know, I was enrolled in this MBA program. And as an instructional designer, you sort of look at the world through design. And for those of you out there that might not know what instructional design is, it is the science of being able to take any kind of content and to organize it and structure it in a way that learners are really going to learn the material.
Just to give my audience a little bit of background on that particular program, is it a synchronous program, asynchronous? Is it a mixture?
That's a great question. It is a synchronous program. The students meet twice a week. They're taking two courses at a time twice a week. You're either online Tuesdays or Thursday nights for 2 hours at a time.
Now, are most of your students local or are they coming from all over?
All over the world, because it's totally online. We will come together for a week at the beginning of the program in a residency where you get to meet, and it's a cohort program. So you stay with that same group of students throughout the entire program. And then we come together at the very end.
How long are the, are they 8 week sessions, 15
yes,
weeks?
Yes, 8 weeks.
8 weeks? Yeah, that seems to be the length most online programs are using these days. Because I'm a technologist, I guess I'm very curious in the technology you used and how you're, because you're doing it synchronously, how the bandwidth is, you know, from Grenada.
I have to say connectivity is always one of our greatest challenges. On most nights, the bandwidth works fairly well. But if you happen to be in a region of the country where it's the bandwidth isn't so great, you're going to, you know, maybe drop offline once or twice during the class. But they get right back on.
Yeah. And the software you use?
Yes, the software that we use is the Wimba Live Classroom. And for our learning management system, we use Sakai.
So that's an open source learning management system. So does that mean you have a pretty big IT department there? Or is that hosted by someone else?
Sakai and Wimba are both hosted in their corporate headquarters. I mean, we really don't host them themselves, sort of in the cloud, I guess. And but we do have a very good, very robust IT system.
So the big question is, what did you learn? What secrets were revealed?
Okay. Well, I call it the good, the bad, and the ugly. So in terms of the good, we found out that the cohort system worked really well. Students, you know, you build those relationships and you just love coming together. I mean, I loved it as a student. I love getting online every Tuesday and Thursday. My cohort became like an extended family over the time I was with them. The online tools were great. You know, you could raise your hand. We had video. We had a text chat box within in our online live classroom. So the tools worked really well. So that's the good. The bad was the connectivity, because it's disruptive. When somebody falls offline, and I have to say we even had instructors who would fall offline, and when you only have 2 hours to work with and you lose 10 minutes of your class, that's a lot of precious time. So that was part of the bad. The other bad was, you know, you're online and you're not visible all the time. In the Wimba system, you're visible only when it's your time to talk or when you're talking. You press a key and it activates your video. The rest of the time, nobody can see what you're doing. And I know myself, you know, if I didn't have an engaging instructor who kept me on my toes, and if by any chance you just were familiar with the material, you didn't feel you need to know it, there may be a temptation to do other things. And I happen to know for a fact that some of my colleagues were doing things like, you know, doing their nails or paying their bills. Yeah. But there's a whole piece behind that in terms of online education that if you want to talk about a little bit later about, you know, immediacy and presence and what, you know, that's where the instructional design comes into the whole thing.
Yeah. Now, I'm familiar certainly with instructional design when it comes to the learning management system and structuring an asynchronous course. What are the kinds of things that you recommend in a synchronous course to help engage the students?
Okay. Well, I believe that interaction is at the heart of the learning experience and is widely cited as the defining characteristic of successful learning in both a traditional and online environment. It serves as a catalyst for influencing student motivation, active learning, and participation. What we're really looking for here is that participation. How can you keep the learners engaged and participating? So it's as a instructor really learning how to use the tools. So you could use a tool. I'll give you just some examples. One tool is we have in the system, you could press on a link and take students out to any website that's out there. And there is so much out there on YouTube, TED Talks, etc., that you that relates to any MBA topic. It's really amazing. So, you know, you send the students out there 5 minutes, they're engaged, they're visually seeing something, auditorially, they're hearing different things, and it keeps them engaged. Then you come back, asking questions is a great way to keep students participating. Encouraging students to answer in the chat. Now, this takes a really experienced teacher to be able to teach your lesson and watch the chat responses and listen to the responses in the audio all at the same time. But that's why we're very big in our university on doing teacher training. Our instructors have to go through a rather robust training session and a testing out a sort of pilot teaching session before we let them teach online.
Well, that's good. Now, how many students were in a typical class?
Oh, this is another great question. We have a limit of 20 students in a class.
That seems to be good. You know, I've heard any more than 20, 25, it's too much for an individual teacher to handle. Now, and if it's any larger than that, you almost need to have a facilitator or another grad student there helping out with the logistics and the managing the audience.
Well, Rod, something interesting happened to us. We had one cohort that ended up with 26 students in it. We didn't turn them away. We should have. But so we kept them, and it was almost unmanageable. It had to do with that cohort is split them into two separate groups. And as part of that, you know, I had in my instructional design master courses that I've taken, I've always heard that the optimum size was about 7 to 12. So I called a number of my colleagues at other universities and asked them. I called 20 different universities and got the same responses back. Gwen, when you're doing online synchronous learning, that's the optimal 7 to 12. If you need to stretch it to 20, as long as you have a really excellent instructor that can engage all students, not of them hide behind the scenes, it works.
Now, one thing that's come up here recently in talking about teaching online is how about the examinations? How did you handle, you know, high stakes exams? Were they online? Did they have to go to a testing center? How did that work?
Most of our courses do not require exams. However, the finance, accounting, and managerial economics are three of the courses where we do have final exams. And we sent them out and, you know, trusted the students. However, I do have to say we did find some students who were actually sharing a document, putting it up on Google Docs, each of them contributing to that. And fortunately, I don't know who they were, but they were dealt with. Yeah, so we haven't solved that one yet. What we may look to do is our medical school, of course, you know, you have a lot of exams in medical school. We have our own testing software, so we may look to leveraging that software. I don't know what it is, but I know that it's very effective and it works for our medical school.
How about activities out of class? Were there other video lectures or other, you know, discussion board assignments? What other kinds of work were expected outside of class?
Right. We had a standard where we expected at least 9 hours of outside work for each class. So it was pretty intense. We had discussion boards. We had one instructor that used Twitter as part of, engaging participation outside of the class. That was actually turned out to be very popular. We got a lot of traction through that. We had a lot of small group work. It wasn't, every week you have a small group, but we had a lot of group projects. So people used to have to meet offline outside of class. And of course, the WIMBA tool enables that. You're able to go in and meet in your small groups online.
Now, you mentioned one thing about maybe a couple of students cheating on the exam. What other secrets were revealed about your students?
Yeah, well, this is where we start to kind of get to the ugly parts. No, this was really going on, but we had a few students who were on Skype. They formed a little Skype group, and during class, they would be Skyping each other. One of them did not know the answer. They would quickly let one of their Skype buddies know. Another individual would kind of get online and stall the teacher, perhaps by saying something like, "Oh, I didn't quite hear that question," or "Yeah, I have the same question." Meanwhile, other students would go out and do a quick research in the internet to find the question or go look it up in the book or whatever. Skype that back, and then lo and behold, the student would answer.
Okay.
And as soon as we caught on to it, because another student who was part of the group felt so bad about this going on, he got out of the group, but he also let the director of the program know this was going on. So once we found that out, we made it impossible for them to do that. And we did this by calling on people, and if they didn't answer immediately, we dinged them in their participation points, and they knew it because we sort of stated at the beginning of the class, now participation is a good part of your grade here, and if I call on you and you don't answer, you will have some participation points deducted. And I'm telling you, Rod, within a week, the behavior stopped.
That's good. That's good. We're a Blackboard institution here, and I know one of the next updates we're getting, they have a discussion board feature, which it sounds really good. You can't comment on other people's posts until you post. Actually, you can't. You even see your fellow students post until you post. So that can be turned on or off by the instructor, and that way the student can't just, copy or parrots what somebody else is saying, and I think goes towards improving the authentic participation.
Yeah, oh, that's good. I want to look into that.
What else did you learn about your students? Anything else you can share?
73% of online students admit to cheating, compared with 50% of blended learning. That's just one sighting. There's all kinds of different statistics out there. So we implement something called Turnitin, which I'm not sure if you've had a blog on this, but
no, I haven't. But that is something that's built into Blackboard here, and I don't know offhand how many faculty use it, but it certainly seems pretty effective.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the statistics on that is for those that don't know what it is. A company that you submit your papers, your students within the learning management system automatically can have this Turnitin turned on. And what happens is the student's paper goes into Turnitin's database, which is it is just incredible. It's 14 billion current and archive web pages, 150 million student papers, and 110 million content items from academic publishers. And it matches the student's work to that resource, that reservoir of. And then it comes back and gives you a report and tells you exactly where those similar quotes came from. What universities?
You mentioned one thing that you learned about how to ask student questions in a synchronous session so that you make sure that they weren't getting answers from their buddies. What else did you learn from your experiences that were then rolled back into new courses?
Well, the participation. And, you know, a lot of this comes down to basic learning theory. We know that learners can only handle so much in their brain at a time. And, you know, to be able to really chunk material in a way that's going to be good for the learner. But the other thing is mixing it up a lot. I would say not teaching any more than 7 minutes on a particular topic, 7 at the max, before you do something different, like ask a question or get the students to go out into a breakout group. The WIMBA classroom allows you to divide your students up and send them out into breakout rooms, get them to, you know, do some group work and then come back. So the key is the design, how you design your class to have various activities and engagement with the students.
Now, you mentioned you certainly train your instructors how to teach, this using best practices in a synchronous course. Did they know who you were? Did they know you were an instructional designer? Do you think that affected the way they handled their course?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they know that because I take them through a mini instructional design training as part of our onboarding with our MBA as an...
Okay, so they all knew who you were.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Is there any place for recorded lectures? Did anybody do that? Just record a lecture they might have given, you know, in a face-to-face course and play that back? Or that just wasn't part of the curriculum?
No, that is a strong part of the curriculum for those instructors that want to do that. I've seen it used in two ways. One example of that would be in finance, where you're doing a lot of calculations, a lot of ratios. And say there's 3 different ways to do it. You can do it in Excel, you could do it on a financial calculator, or you can do it freehand. And so this is one of the places where I found students really needed a lot of repetition. But if you get all that content in 2 hours, you just can't sit there and repeat and repeat and repeat. So we have our instructors in that situation record the steps. And literally, you know, in the WIMBA classroom, you can bring up Excel and the students can be seeing you working in Excel, records it. So we know that our students would go back and review that over and over again until they got that. Second way is if we have an instructor who has more content than they can possibly teach in the 2 hours and really want more of a discussion type of a class. So rather than, you know, doing a lot of the teaching of concepts within the class, they would pre-record a session. As part of those 9 hours of work, students would be required to go in, view the WIMBA archived session ahead of time, come to class prepared to discuss the content.
You know, in talking to folks here and elsewhere about online learning, I talk about it as being a spectrum from totally face-to-face to totally asynchronous. And it seems like the best approach is always somewhere in the middle. It seems like what you're talking about is a hybrid course, but with the, you know, mandatory synchronous sessions. Do you also record those synchronous sessions in case a student has to miss a class?
Yes, all classes are archived.
That seems to me would be pretty important. One last question I think I have for you is, how do you scale something like this? Wouldn't it be better to have, in terms of that spectrum I was just talking about, having more of a asynchronous class in order to be able to scale it with more students? Or haven't you found a need for that?
Our model that we find works for us is the asynchronous. I think that is a distinguishing feature of our program. And we have done a little research in this area, and while both methods are equal in value in terms of what the student learns. We know that the research says that. We have just found that for our learners, they prefer the synchronous. And there's certainly a place for asynchronous. And, you know, who knows, in the future, that may be something that some of our classes consider. But for right now, this model's really working for us.
Well, that's great. I really appreciate your time and talking to you about your program. And I'll have to come in and visit you down there sometime. I wouldn't mind.
We'd love to have you. You could come as a visiting professor.
Sounds good to me. All right, Gwen. Take care now.
Okay, take care.
That's it for today's episode. I hope you learned some tips about how to keep your online students engaged. So don't forget to check the links on my show notes at rodspulsepodcast.com. Now stay tuned for Woods of Chaos by Rob Koslow. Until next time, have a great week. Thank you.
that's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to give Rod feedback. You can leave comments on his blog, send email to rod@rodspulsepodcast.com, or leave audio feedback on his comment line at 610-616-2199. The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Murray, and does not represent the official viewpoint of the University of the Sciences or any other institution or company.